Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Smith on the drive, feeds inside, and James with a clutch. Irving finds room. Jackson the rebound. Ahead is Caldwell Pope. Perfect pass and a flush. Dellavedova finds Irving for three. Oh, he puts it in. Kyrie Irving nails it. Kyrie Irving, what a shot and a perfectly executed play.
Clearly got it off in time. Give Tyronn Lue a lot of credit. This is a design play.
In the opening game of the three-pointer, hit by Marcus Morris. Now he turns it over. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope delivers it right to Morris. All kinds of time, and he delivers the three. Crowd into it. Now James on a breakaway. All the way in. LeBron vintage. Chance for the final shot here as the Pistons are down two. Harris turns, gets to the rim. Tobias Harris with a big third quarter. All tied at 78. It'll count if it goes. And it goes. Kyrie Irving with a half-court bomb.
This is not a heave. This is a shot from Kyrie.
Lost it. A little fade away from three. No, not there. Ball's on the floor. Stanley Johnson's got it. And the Pistons have a chance. No timeouts. Gotta hustle it up. Reggie Jackson looking for help. 2-1. Jackson, the three short. Game over. Cavaliers win. They sweep the Detroit Pistons.
Stan, what did you see on that final play? Did you see contact or what?
We'll let the league comment on that. Either you guys can comment on it. You saw the game as much as I did. You've all got DVRs. You can watch it and comment on it. You want me to comment on it so I can spend another $25,000. You guys saw it as well as I did, so write what you saw. I'm proud of our guys, especially today. Look, I told them, I've been on the other side of being up 3-0 in series. Usually what happens when you're up 3-0 and you make a run like they did in the third quarter, the team dies and goes away. And we talked about it for 2 days. And our guys stayed in the fight.
Refs need to have some type of system in line for necessarily no fines, suspensions, being fired. Same thing happens to us. Make bad plays. You're not really being productive to the sport. You know, I think you should have consequences just like the players. So,
do you think it's fair to say that the most important thing that you can do this summer and for the team this summer is for you to improve the free throw shooting so that you're on the court at the end of games?
You think I sit around all day and not work on it? It's obvious, right? Next question.
We understand what we all want. We understand what we want individually and what will help the team. First of all, we're going to Kev a lot in the post. We want Kev to continue to be aggressive, put pressure on the defense, and then we want Kyrie as well to be aggressive on pick and rolls, and when he's able to get his shot, we want him to take it. For myself, I play off these guys, and tonight obviously was a prime example of it.
Ariza trying to find some room. Curry falls down and grabs his right leg. Curry asking for help to get up. Fell awkwardly and immediately grabbed his right leg, and you see him hobbling right now.
Zubac went down and was a wet spot. Curry looked like he slipped on it.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, we might as well start with the end of that montage first, because that wet spot that Steph Curry apparently slipped on is going to cost him at least the next 2 weeks of his NBA playoff season. Welcome as we begin hour number two of the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Yeah, Steph Curry, literally within the last half hour, diagnosed with a sprained MCL in that knee. He was already dealing with the tweaked ankle, obviously. Now the knee, it's going to cost him at least 2 weeks. The report is that he will be reevaluated then. That doesn't mean he's coming back in two. That's just when the reevaluation happens. So what does that mean for the Western Conference? What does that mean? You know, Steph Curry to the league, literally, as the Warriors try to defend their NBA championship with the two-time MVP now on the shelf. They're already in a 3-1 series with the Rockets. They've proven they can win without Curry twice now in that series. But a second-round matchup, potentially with the Clippers, it's going to be the Clippers or the Blazers. That second-round series, We know there is no love lost between the Clippers and the Warriors. The Clips have wanted a shot at these guys for a long time, and now with the straw that stirs the drink by the bay, out for the potentially, anyway, for the first two or three or maybe even four games. I mean, literally, it could spell the end of the Warriors' run in this magical 73-game season, one that will have a lot of long-lasting ramifications. I'm just doing the math here. Today is the 25th, and I'm looking out 2 weeks, and I see May 9th. That's what I see, May 9th. Now, Jim Cushlin looked up on NBA.com to see when the second round is scheduled to start. That is all subject, of course, to the various series ending potentially earlier. But they are scheduled to start tentatively, the second round games, on May 2nd.
A week from today.
A week from today. Thank you. And that may be earlier, depending, again, on when these series finish themselves off. If the Clippers are able to handle the Blazers in the next two, you know, they could be playing a little bit earlier. And Golden State finishes off without Curry, the Rockets. It could be earlier. It could be May 1st. Could be April 30th. Point being, then, there's going to be at least a week, maybe plus, a week plus, of second-round games that Steph Curry would miss. And that would mean at least the first two. And, Jim, how many games, how many days did it take in between games in the second round? Just one, right?
Usually just one. I think it depends how they make the schedules. I've noticed that each team in this first round has one game where they have 2 days off and the rest are
the beginning,
day off.
Right
game,
at the
that's
beginning.
Usually at the beginning, yeah.
Right. And that's only the first round, I think, because there's so many. I wonder. We could be talking about at least the first three games of the second round.
If
he gets reevaluated and isn't ready yet, it could be more.
Yep.
I mean, that's a game changer. I just threw a poll up for the sake of fun. I just threw a poll up on our Twitter feed, which is Sports Radio 106.5, and I want you to vote on it. Get there and follow us there and then vote on it. Who is, as of now, the favorite to win the NBA championship? I think everybody agreed Warriors going into the playoffs, but now today, after watching the Cavaliers sweep the Pistons and the Spurs sweep the Grizzlies, your three choices on the Twitter poll that we just threw up there moments ago, still the Warriors, or now it's the Spurs, or no way, it's the Cavaliers. Who do you think is favored to win the championship now with Curry potentially, you know, missing enough games in the second round to knock the Warriors out early? So cast your vote there on our Twitter feed at Sports Radio 106.5. All right, now we want to go back a little bit more in depth on that and more in depth on the four-game sweep in the 1-8 matchup, which a lot of people expected. But a lot of us, I admit I'm one of them, thought it would go five. I thought the Pistons would take game three at home, and then they would have to close it out with the Cavaliers in game number five. But we all know how it went down yesterday. And joining us now for the postmortem is Chris Manning, who covers those Cavaliers for fearthesword.com. An SB Nation website, and Jordan Ballant, who covers the Pistons, also for SB Nation, but for DetroitBadBoys.com. Guys, thanks for joining us again. How are you guys doing?
Good to be here.
Well.
It's good to have you guys. Obviously, as I just set it up, you guys represent the Cavaliers and the Pistons from an online media side of things, but give us your thoughts on the Warriors. Does that news make them no longer the favorite, or do you think they're still good enough without Steph Curry that they won't find themselves in a hole in a prospective second-round matchup and that the Warriors are still the team to beat? Chris, why don't you go first?
You know, I think they're definitely good enough to beat Houston probably in five. I mean, they're too good. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see when he comes back, right? I mean, I think the Clippers are good, obviously, but I think they've always had problems stringing together three or four playoff games in a row where they've played at a high level. They seem to kind of gas out or they just kind of fade. I mean, look at last year when they lost to the Rockets. They just kind of ran out of gas. I mean, they beat the Spurs, and then they lost to the Rockets, who, you know, like, were good last year but not great, and they just maybe because they ran out of gas. And if they get out of this Blazers series and they're a little bit gassed and Steph can come back in game three or something, you know, the Warriors are probably still advantage at that point. And for Steph, and if he comes back in a reasonable amount of time in the second round or in the conference finals, I still think you guys look at him the favorite because if he can come back and just get kind of back in the flow of things quickly, and I assume that he will just because of who he is, how they play, and just how good he is and how unified as a team they are, I still think they're up there. But if it's not, if he is out longer and they do get eliminated or they do not have him for a long time, I'd probably go to the Spurs.
So still not the Cavs, okay? And you're the sword
right. Really good.
Okay, we'll revisit that in a moment. Jordan Ballant, what say you?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely going to be a loss, but I'm waiting for everyone's hot take after Game 5
to be, oh, the Warriors are still alive. If they beat Houston in game five, I think everyone's going to be talking about how this is still the team to beat. 73 wins was not a fluke. Sure, you need luck, and part of luck is having a little bit of luck in terms of injuries and staying healthy. The Warriors definitely were that last year. And I think they're in a situation now where going into a second round series with the Clippers, if they can get by Houston, that's a series that maybe, depending on how those first few games go, especially those first two home games, it puts Golden State in a position where they can possibly rest Curry to come back for a Western Conference Finals against the Spurs. If you can rest him for that Clippers series, it might give him another week and a half on top of the 2 weeks that you talked about he'll be missing with this MCL sprain.
You are being grossly disrespectful of the Clippers, are you not, by saying rest him during that series and just they don't need their, because, just for fun, we go back and we talk about the 95-96 Spurs, or wait a minute, which one was it that was the 72 win?
95-96.
Yeah, 5-6. You know, we go back to that. He is their Jordan. I'm not saying he is Jordan. Yeah. He is their Jordan. He, you know, can you imagine Michael being taken off of that team? Would they have enough with Pippen and the rest to go on to do what they did and win the championship or win a playoff series? You take Jordan out of that, I don't think so. You take Curry off of this, and you're deciding, yeah, maybe they just can rest him for precautionary reasons, even if he is back health-wise or cleared to play. You're saying they might rest him to save him for the Western Finals? You're really dismissing the Clippers' chances of beating the Warriors without Steph Curry?
I think, again, it depends on those first two games of the series. If they find themselves 1-1 or even 0-2, that's going to really put the pressure on the Warriors. But if you're 2-up in that series when you go out to L.A. To play the Clippers for two in the Staples Center, I think there's a situation where you can look at the health of Steph Curry and say, hey, we don't want to rush this guy back. We know that an MCL sprain, especially a player that has an injury history of ankle injuries especially,
that's something you want to watch. If you're up 2-0, but I guess maybe let's I'm going to put your feet to the fire a little bit more and say, will they be? Do you think they could be up 2-0 on a Clippers team without Steph Curry?
I think so. It really changes how this team plays when Sean Livingston is running the point, but Sean Livingston is an above replacement level player. He's a very good point guard, and I think it's also an interesting little storyline that could be going against the Clippers, who originally drafted him, 11 seasons ago now, and he's going to be starting in a second-round series against that franchise that drafted him. I think that's really interesting. He's been playing well. Pressure's really on Klay Thompson on the offensive end to pick up a bit of the pace and some of the shooting that's left behind when you lose Steph Curry, but so far so good with Klay Thompson. I mean, what he did in the third quarter, him and Draymond Green in game four was fantastic. So yeah. I think there's a very good chance they can go in and go 2-up.
I think we're being misled a little bit, in my opinion. That was Jordan Belland, by the way, who writes covers the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com. We got Chris Manning of Fear the Sword here as well. Jim Cushlin is here. Bob France. Guys, all three of you, I think that's a little misleading. I'll be honest with you. I think the Houston Rockets are a hot mess. And I know James Harden got hot and got them a game. They are a wreck, though. They are a wreck. They don't listen to their coach. Dwight Howard is a team cancer. James Harden is a no defense playing. I wish I was Steph Curry. I should have had the MVP last year. I'm going to take 50 shots if I have to and get my 60. I don't care if I win kind of thing, like Kobe in his last game thing. And I know I'm being really, really over the top here, but that's what I see. I see easily the worst team in the playoffs being the Houston Rockets here. I can't imagine, and Kush, you can pick it up here if you have a thought. I cannot imagine a much more talented and well-coached, Doc Rivers-coached Clippers team falling prey to a Warriors team with Klay Thompson being the primary gun.
By the way, the only thing in that whole thing that I take issue with at all, Bob, I don't think Houston's the worst team in these playoffs. They got eliminated last night. They were the injury-riddled Memphis Grizzlies.
Fair enough. fair point. Very fair point. But the Grizzlies were the worst team because of injuries.
Because of injuries. The Rockets
were the worst team because they're the Rockets, because of their personalities, because they fired Kevin McHale 11 games into the season, which was a joke, because Dwight Howard is just a train wreck on hardwood. They're the worst team because of the team that they are. The Grizzlies are a good team, I think, that would have been much, much more of a competitive team in the series against the Spurs had Gasol and Conley been able to go, among others. Anything else, Jim, or were you done with that?
No, that's all I wanted to throw out there.
Okay. So neither one of you guys chose the Cavaliers, though. You said you stayed with the Warriors, right? Jordan, you would still say, even without Curry, for potentially half of the second round of the playoffs against the Clippers. And who knows? It could certainly be against the Blazers. But you'd stay with the Warriors is still the favorite. And, Chris, you said the Spurs. Neither one of you think the Cavaliers, after this four-game sweep of the Pistons and the performance of the Big Three, particularly the emergence of Kyrie Irving now in his second playoff season as the leader, the go-to guy to get points when they need him. And I thought that was really telling in the last couple games that when, crunch time was here, it wasn't LeBron dribbling the ball out and then taking a shot as the shot clock wound down. It was Kyrie Irving. And he was successful most of the time and really emerged as a tremendous threat. You don't think that that's enough to make the Cavaliers the favorite in the event of a Warriors collapse without Steph Curry? Chris, why not?
I just look at the Spurs, and I think there's a lot that San Antonio does that I think gives the Cavs problems. It starts with Kawhi Leonard. I mean, there's no one in the league that can defend Kawhi like defend LeBron like Kawhi does. He's so physical. He can follow him everywhere, and he's just, he's unbelievable. They can do some weird stuff defending Love. They can do some weird stuff defending Kyrie with Danny Green and, try to hide Tony Parker on J.R. Smith or Matthew Dellavedova. There are just things they can do that I think give them an edge. However, if the Cavs are going to win the title, I think their chances are a lot better against the Spurs. The Warriors present so many problems with the depth lineup and with Steph and all these things, but I think the Spurs, as good as they are, I think they're a little bit more beatable than the Warriors would be for the Cavs.
Fair enough. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I agree. No matter if it's the Warriors or Spurs coming out of the Western Conference, I think they're both very tough matchups for the Cavs. These last two games, I've really started to rethink my position on the Cavaliers. I thought they might have some issues with some of the teams in the Eastern Conference that could be coming their way. But you're right. The emergence of Kyrie Irving and actually playing both ends of the floor and not just being a traffic cone on defense. And I hate to say that about a player of his caliber, but there are times that he really is not giving effort on that end, and he's still such a great offensive player. But now we're seeing him, you're right, maybe it's the second year, now that he has the playoff experience and knows what it takes, that could be a very big change, a very big difference of this team going through the rest of the Eastern Conference playoffs. So I like them more now to get out of the East. I would still take the Spurs or the Warriors in a finals matchup.
I'm the only one here, Bob, that I think is going Cavs. I even went on Twitter, voted on the poll you just put up there for us. Yeah, I'm voting Cavs because they do have some matchup problems like anybody does against somebody of San Antonio's caliber. But just think of the two games, Spurs v. Cavs this year, and the two games, Warriors v. Cavs. Cavs not only beat San Antonio in one of them, they were pretty solid before a fourth quarter collapse in the other one. And I agree, they have a much better shot. And I think it was Jordan you said this. They have a much better shot against someone like San Antonio than Golden State. One would, in theory, still favor San Antonio, but I'd go with the Cavs at that point. I really would.
I got to tell you, I'm kind of leaning toward where Chris was, and I guess Jordan, who started with Warriors still, and then if not Warriors, then Spurs. And I've been saying this really, Jim, this since halfway through the season.
Oh, yeah.
As the Warriors were on the march, and they were, and I don't have the numbers exactly, but, when they were 44-5 or 3 or whatever, and you look at there, and nobody's paying attention, the Spurs, who are 42-7, just two games different, and the Spurs, to me, are a really, really tremendously well-coached team that provide a very different kind of game plan and a different kind of matchup for the Cavaliers than the Warriors do. And for that length of time, I've been kind of saying I think my favorite to win the title has been the Spurs. That hasn't changed. It has, in fact, been strengthened by this injury news to Steph Curry. I do, however, agree with Jordan that I think I feel a lot better about the Cavs' chances based on some of the things we saw in this first round of the playoffs. Jordan, I want to stay with you for the next part of this question. And we're having a little bit of another roundtable discussion, post-mortem on the Cavs-Pistons series. A sweep by the Cavaliers, obviously, but looking forward to. Jordan, from the Pistons' point of view, was there a foul on Kyrie Irving on that last three-point attempt or ball handling to get up the court to take that shot by Reggie Jackson, who said after the game, "I think officials should be able to be fined and suspended and even fired for not doing their jobs and for not contributing correctly to the league." Very, very upset. I'm sure he's gonna feel that one maybe the same way Stan Van Gundy did, maybe even a little bit worse. But does he have a point? Was there a foul?
I think he has a point to feel that way, and that was definitely just an emotional response in the postgame. I think that's a bit of a judgment call, that situation with Kyrie, and do you call a foul there, especially giving Reggie three free throws in that situation? I think that puts the official in a very difficult spot, and I just don't know how you call a foul there. I don't. And that's, coming as a Pistons fan, I still don't know how you can actually call a foul on Kyrie Irving in that situation when it is so close.
You would not have blown your whistle had you been there.
No, I wouldn't have. Even as a Pistons fan, a very biased official in that position.
That's why I asked you first, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because I agree. I think that would have been one of the ultimate bailout calls had he done that.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyrie was kind of bumping him a little bit with his chest on his way up, but when he took that shot, if you look, Kyrie leaned back and kind of ducked in front of him, or actually off to the side of him, and the actual release of the shot was unobstructed. It really, really was. I think it would have been a bailout, body contact kind of a thing. That you're right. In a 2-point game, there's no official in this league that is going to give him three free throws to try to extend this series to a fifth game. What about you, Chris? What did you see?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think it's a judgment call, and I think it's one that's really hard to call a foul in that moment, just because it's the end of the game and it's such a big moment. The other thing is, Reggie, if you look at Abe Schwarden from Slam magazine, tweeted a picture of the end of the last sequence. And if he had taken one more dribble, with the way Kyrie had kind of tailed off a little bit, he could have taken a dribble and still had enough time to get up one shot, like a little bit closer to the 3-point line, and had a cleaner look. And it's just one of those situations where you probably could have called it, and maybe it wouldn't be called earlier in the game, but at the same time, at that point, it's a little bit of a bell call, and it's a little bit just, it's that situation where it's so hard to blow your whistle in that moment.
Yeah, and you know what? I think what you just described was a guy who is not used to being in that position, quite obviously. Reggie Jackson, his first time in charge of his own team, as a playoff team, especially being here. You know, he rushed it a little bit. He kind of panicked. They didn't have any timeouts, as you know. And I think he kind of panicked and shot that too early. You're right. He could have gotten away from Kyrie with a little bit more of a sidestep and one more dribble and taken a better shot, and he did not. So we're in agreement on that. So let's talk. That means, it's a legitimate four-game sweep. So let's talk about it from sweep. It was not a boring series. I thought it would be a boring series in which we may have all found sleep. But it was a sweep, not sleep. And now let's talk about the impact of that going forward. Jordan, go back to you for your Pistons. They got swept, but it was a good series. I talked to another writer last week who said, I think this is going to be, if it is a sweep, it's going to be one of the closest series sweeps that we've seen. And this is a Cavs writer who really, really, respected the Pistons' chances here and felt like the Cavaliers weren't going to blow them out in any way, and they might win four hard-fought games. I think that's what we saw. I think we saw a Pistons team that Stan Van Gundy said he's very proud of and is very encouraged and ready to grow with. I think they absolutely showed that in this 8-versus-1 matchup. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think this was a great opportunity for a young team to earn some experience and also some respect from a lot of NBA people who probably just didn't see the Pistons this season. They got to see a really feisty young team, especially in Game 1, the closing minutes, and what they were able to do in the fourth quarter of Game 4 when the game is on the line and there's an opportunity to extend that series with their backs against the wall. I think it was great. And even just looking at something like how, I would go as far to say inflammatory, some of the Pistons statements have been about officials, including Stan Van Gundy. And when you look at the era of Pistons basketball, you've got the bad boys, the going-to-work Pistons, and now it's like the no-respect Pistons. I like that they're trying to build a bit of a chip on their shoulder, having to go out and fight for that respect each night. And you're seeing that from these younger players, like we did with Stanley Johnson. I know we talked about guarding LeBron James and being kind of verbal about that. I think it's good. It's nice to see that. I think there is a lot to take away that's positive for this Pistons team going forward. And that's not always the case when you talk about a sweep, but I think there's some good that came out of this series from the Pistons' perspective.
I'm absolutely in agreement with that, Jordan. I mean, I've been saying all season long that even if it's a blowout in the first round, get above 500, get in the playoffs, that is a successful season that is showing progress, and you go forward from there. And that forward, in this case, I spent up a good hour researching some contract numbers late last night after this one. And to a big certain degree, a lot of the Pistons' core is already going to be there. Reggie Jackson signed through 1920. You got Kentavious for one more year before he hits restricted free agency. Tobias Harris, Marcus Morris, they're here through 2018-19. You do have a couple guys off the bench like Tolliver and Blake who will be free agents, but the biggest one in the offseason to start with is how do you think Andre Drummond is going to end up going through all this and going forward? I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be with the Pistons going forward. And really, once you take care of that, I think you just need some bench scores, and this team has a legitimate chance next year to make it to round two.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're right, it does start with Andre Drummond, and we need to make him feel like the leader of this team. I like that Reggie Jackson himself, and now you're even seeing guys like Stanley Johnson start to step up, becoming part of the core of this team's leadership moving forward. I think you have to give him a max contract. There are very few players that can go 15-15 and really be successful on both ends of the floor the way Andre can, and he's still developing. He's a young player, and we have to show him that he is part of the future with his contract. And you're right, bench shooting and scoring from the bench, that's huge. I think the backup point guard position is one we really have to focus on in the offseason and try to find someone who can facilitate an offense and find their own shot. That's going to be huge. But you're right, the way the contract's set up, Stan Van's done a great job starting to put this core together without having to tax the future by taking on any bad contract.
One more question on the Pistons real quick from you, Jordan, then we'll talk to Chris more about the Cavs. One of the reporters, and we had this in the montage, Jim, and I don't know if you can isolate it or not, but they asked Andre Drummond about free throw shooting, and he was clearly annoyed by it and said something to the effect of, what, like, I'm not working on that every day, next question. I'm sure he is, but the question is a valid one. You know, it's dude, we know you're a great player, you're the league's leading rebounder, you're an inside presence, you're a shot-blocking presence, you're all of those things. Do you have it, Jim? Go ahead, hit that.
Do you think it's fair to say that the most important thing that you can do this summer and for the team this summer is for you to improve the free throw shooting so that you're on the court at the end of games?
You think I sit around all day and not work on it? It's obvious, right? Next question.
Yeah, that was it. You think I sit around all day and not work on it? I know he does. We hear all kinds of reports about everything that he's doing, but it isn't working. And because of that, as you know, it's not just missing a point every time he lets it fly. It's the point where they have to pull him because teams are going to get back, you know, foul him and get back into games or extend leads or whatever the case might be. And he can't play in clutch or crunch situations. I almost called that crutch situation. So, Jordan, you know, as a Pistons fan and writer, what's your takeaway on that? I don't know if he can ever fix it. You know, Shaq was never able to fix it. There have been, you know, Chris Dudley from way back in the 80s Cavaliers was a 25% free throw shooter or something stupid like that. Some guys just can never fix it, and it's going to limit his ability to help this team win in the playoffs and win championships.
It's very true, and it makes the decision that Stan Van Gundy has to make in closing game situations very difficult when you have to take possibly the best player off the floor in certain matchups to bring in a player who can just shoot right above 50%. For free throw percentage. That's all we're looking for. And with Andre Drummond, because he is so good in other aspects of the game, we're really just looking at you to not be the worst free throw shooter in the league. That's all his fans were asking for. And it seems very clear at this point it is some sort of mental block. I know Coach has talked about he can shoot and make 60 to 70% of his free throws in practice. Even if that's an embellishment, I need to see something a little closer to that. So it's something he can't just shy away from. He can't continue to just question it and say it's not an issue. It is an issue, and I'm not sure what we do. It's something that, because it's part of the mental part of his game, it starts to bring in questions about his mentality as a basketball player. And you hate to question that when you're about to give a 22-year-old a max contract in this league. But that's kind of where we're at. In Detroit Bad Boys, we've covered this. You start to question, you know, how much is he really working on this? What parts of his mental game does he need to work on? And is he a strong enough player to be the best player on a championship-caliber team? And right now, we don't know that.
No, we don't. And it's a shame because he's so good. And I know he's a good guy, and I know he works on it. I have absolutely, you know, that's one thing people say, and I, as a talk show host, we are given to hyperbole from time to time. You guys as blog writers and columnists are, I'm sure, do the same thing. But we as talk show hosts, you know, we always say, you know, especially should – Jim, you and I had this conversation, you know, and Adam Silver has addressed it throughout the year. You know, should the league change the rules so they can't just hack a Ben, hack an Andre, hack a DeAndre Jordan, I mean, or whatever – And my answer is always no. Just get better at shooting free throws. Leave the rules alone. You don't encourage, you know, guys to suck at free throws by saying, that's okay, we'll take that part of the game away so you don't have to get better at it. We'll just stop, you know, teams from putting you there. And we say it very dismissively and very insultingly. I'm admitting this. You know, get better at it, for crying out loud. It's 15 feet away and it's free. Nobody's allowed to touch you. You know, my kid can do this. He's 12 and he can make 7 out of 10. You can't make 3 or 4 out of 10. It's very dismissive and very insulting, but the fact of the matter is, these guys, especially like Andre Drummond, I know he's trying. We hear the reports, the hours, talking not only with free throw shooting coaches, but also mind coach either, but whatever it is, somebody to help him with the mental aspect of making free throws. And it's just not working. So it's just very sad to see and sad to say. I want to move to Chris Manning. We got Jordan Ballant from DetroitBadBoys.com, and we're Jim Cushlin, of course, and now Chris Manning, who's with FearTheSword.com, Cavaliers site. All right, Chris, there were 4 games. None of them were easy. None of them were blowouts. They had to come from behind in most of them, and they had to nurse very close leads all the way up to the very end when we had that Reggie Jackson attempt and the accused foul against Kyrie Irving. Did you see enough in round one, in the 1-8, to think to yourself, we really have no worries in the Eastern Conference, we're going to the finals?
I think it reaffirmed what I thought of the Cavs, that they are the very definitive favorites to get out of the East. You know, they handled adversity really, really well. Kyrie emerged, like you said earlier. Kevin Love emerged. Even last night, they kind of overcame a bad Kevin Love performance to move on and, like, just win that game with him, I think, scoring 11 points last night, with Kyrie, you know, scoring so much and having 10 in a row at one point. You know, you got really good production out of J.R. Smith. You got good production out of Matthew Dellavedova. I think most importantly, you saw Tyronn Lue sort of take a step up as a coach and, you know, at times out-coach Van Gundy. And Van Gundy's a great coach. But, you know, Lue in game one went to Love at center and gave Drummond some problems. Then he stopped playing Timofey Mozgov, which ended up being a really, really great move, which, you know, he probably could have done months ago, but, you know, understand why he didn't. But finally got him out of the rotation. Now Channing Frye is getting more minutes. And he just did a lot of really good things. And I think everything with the Cavs was really a step forward for them. And it was a lot cleaner of a series than last year against Boston, especially just because you didn't have anybody get hurt and you didn't have any major injuries coming out of it.
Yeah, and I read a story today before we came on the air. And, Jim, I don't know if you saw this one too, but reports that the Cavaliers were absolutely terrified of Game 4. They were terrified. They weren't sure how to handle this, how long to leave guys to try to close this out in 4, because they were worried so much. And this is actually written by Aaron McMahon, a guy we've had on from M Live, Jim, a number of times, that Cavaliers officials, and I'll just read this. I take it back. Aaron actually is quoting a Cleveland.com writer, Joe Varden, who said the Cavs' deep thinkers, read their office, front office and coaching staff, were terrified over Game 4 Sunday against the Pistons. Not about the possible end result or about any kind of an ankle, well, I guess it wasn't just about the ankle turn, or knee buckle that can happen to any player on any night. They were worried that the same conditions that led to the Olynyk play from a year ago, a chippy series, pending sweep, frustrations boiling over for the losing team, followed by the need to retaliate, were all on the table in Detroit. So, end quote. So they were worried that somebody in Detroit might actually go more than just, you know, we saw that elbow to the neck of LeBron James in Game 3 from Drummond. They were worried that Detroit might do something really, really beyond chippy and something really, really dirty and hurt someone. I guess if anything else or if nothing else, Chris, that's the most important thing here, that we didn't see any of that come to pass.
No, yeah, absolutely. Them getting anyone coming up and having no injuries coming out of the series is huge, especially because there's that moment last night where Love grabbed his elbow, and I think Twitter as a whole, Cavs Twitter at least, was kind of freaked out a little bit and was like, well, it's the same thing as last year, and, you know, he ended up being fine and everything, but it's huge. I mean, last year, I mean, they made the finals and everything, but in a lot of ways, this is their first real run as a team together. I mean, Kyrie was in and out last year during the playoffs. Right. Kevin Love played great the first 3 games. Turn Game 4 and doesn't come back the rest of the year, and, you know, has to, because he's hurt his shoulder so badly. And it's good for those two, especially, I think, to kind of go through this and sort of get the experience of playing in a really, really good series like that, because LeBron's been through tons of them. They haven't really been through those before.
Kyrie Irving is just the second player not named James to lead one of his LeBron James teams in scoring in a playoff series. The other was Dwayne Wade in the 2011 finals. And that one wasn't so much, by the way, because Dwayne Wade was spectacular. That was more because LeBron James was awful. He had an 8-point game against Dallas in that series. He was just not prepared to be in the finals that year. So Kyrie Irving averaging 27.5 points per game in this 4-game sweep to LeBron's 22.75 is an enormous thing. LeBron James was playing well. LeBron James is at his full strength. LeBron James is trying to guide his team back to the finals again, and yet he was, for lack of a way of saying this, they're not competing with each other, but he was outplayed on the offensive end by his point guard, his teammate Kyrie Irving, who really was the go-to guy when they needed a bucket in a big, big way. They were allowing Kyrie Irving to be creative and to get that shot off. What does that mean, Chris, going forward for this team, that teams can't just double or triple LeBron and not have to worry about anybody else, the other four guys on the floor anymore?
You know, I think this is really an important development. It's not a huge macro one, but it's a micro one, because I mean, I think you look at LeBron, he's sort of a control freak. Even when he, early in the year, he was saying Kevin Love is the focal point of our offense, he's still the focal point. But he was just, you know, it's a mental thing with him. With Kyrie, this is one of the first times we've really seen him feed a little bit to another guy on the team. And it's, you know, for Kyrie, I think it's huge, because it's going to give him confidence, going to give him experience he otherwise wouldn't have had. And it's going to, I think, let him maybe figure some things out a little bit. He came into the playoffs sort of struggling a little bit too, which makes it even more impressive, because he wasn't shooting well from three. I don't know how he ended up, but I think coming in the last one, he was shooting over 50% from three after finishing in a 30% during the regular, around 30% during the regular season. And there's still some, you know, little kinks with Kyrie. I think he does over dribble at times. I think there's some things he does that need to be kind of fixed and tweaked a little bit, but I think that he can fix those things by playing and actually getting that experience. And I think for LeBron, he looks at this series and goes, okay, I've done this. I know how to kind of close these things out. Kyrie has never done this, and Kyrie's the guy we're going to need to beat the Warriors, to beat the Heat, to beat the Spurs, to get advanced, and we need Kyrie to have these games. And you give him that experience, I think that's going to pay off. Maybe not round two, if they get a series that they win in five or six or something, but in the conference finals, they get a tough series, or in the NBA finals, when no matter who they play, it's going to be really, really tough.
I do have it here, just since you brought it up, and we'll make this the end of it, because we're way late on our time, guys. But in the postseason, in that 4-game series, he shot 47% from three, up from 32% during the regular season. He was a 321 shooter from three in the regular season, 471 in the postseason. Ironically enough, though, he was an 88% free throw shooter in the regular season, only 75% in this series. Although he didn't have that, he was averaging four free throws a game, three out of four a game. So just kind of interesting that his free throw shooting is down, but his three-point shooting is up. I think the Cavaliers know which one they would rather have. Hey, guys, great conversation. I appreciate it, especially you, Jordan, because the Pistons season comes to a close. Obviously, we'll kind of keep our eyes on what's happening during the offseason. We'll continue to read you and your colleagues at DetroitBadBoys.com, and when there's new Pistons news to discuss, we'll bring you back on. We certainly appreciate that. Excuse me. And, Chris, the train rolls on, obviously, for the Cavaliers, waiting for their second-round opponent now. We'd love to talk to you again when the second round gets underway. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks, both you guys. Appreciate the little roundtable discussion. Great stuff.
Thank you.
All right. It is 4:45, so that means we are 15 minutes late. That's actually one of our worst records ever for missing the bottom of the hour Sports Center. You can tell the clock for me is just a suggestion, not a demand. Let's get out. Let's get a Sports Center from Kush. Let's come back and see if we have time for any phone calls. I don't even know if we do have time for phone calls right now. But what I do know we have time for is this, and I'm very, very happy to tell you about, John Mellencamp coming to Stranahan on October 21st. John Cougar Mellencamp, well, used to be known as Cougar, obviously. Yeah, there we go. John Mellencamp is coming to Stranahan on October 21st. Tickets are going on sale Friday, this Friday the 29th. But if you'd like to beat the box office right now and be caller number 10, to 866-240-1065, I'll give you a pair of those tickets free. So if you want to go see John singing about Jack and Diane and the authority and all the rest, we got you hooked up there. Caller 10, 866-240-1065 right now for John Mellencamp at Stranahan October 21st. Good luck.
Search Facebook /1065 The Ticket. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
It is indeed the Bob France extravaganza. It's 4:52. Only have a few minutes left, so I don't think we're going to have time for any calls at this particular point in time. Why are we playing Billy Idol when we're giving away John Cougar, I'm sorry, I'm always going to call him John Cougar, John Mellencamp tickets today. See, I grew up in, you know, my formative music years, you know, your junior high years and high school years and so on. I grew up in the 80s. That's why I was such a Prince fan, of course, as that horrific situation continues to resonate. But I grew up listening to John Cougar back in like 1980, 81, 82 with Ain't Even Dumb of the Night. Then he went to John Cougar Mellencamp. Now, of course, just John Mellencamp. Anyway, Stephen Rogers. He didn't change his name. Stephen Rogers of Toledo is the winner of the John Mellencamp tickets. Beat the box office. Do not forget, coming up on Friday, the tickets go on sale for John Mellencamp at Stranahan on October 21st. So congratulations. We'll give another pair away tomorrow, and really every day this week we'll have those for you right here on the Extravaganza. Outstanding. Now, this is just coincidence, Jim Cushlin. This is just coincidence that I bring this up at a time that this song is playing. Okay? Steph Curry just hurt himself. And it's wrong to cheer for anybody to be injured. But yet this feels so good. I don't want the Warriors to win another title. I'm not trying to be mean, and I'm not cheering for somebody to be injured, but this is one of those hurts so good. This is just total coincidence. I didn't plan this, honest. But think about that. Steph Curry's injury is just, to me, a little bit of poetic justice. Steph was able to make hay last year in the finals. Yes, it does, John. Steph Curry was able to make hay in the finals last year against a Cavaliers team that featured just Matthew Dellavedova, because Kyrie Irving was unable to go. And as we're watching Kyrie play offense now in these playoffs, and I'm talking about Kyrie against Reggie Jackson and the Pistons, who is played during this season outstanding defense against Reggie Jackson. I mean, really, as was it Chris or Jordan who said he had been playing defense like a traffic cone?
I think that was Jordan.
Jordan said that, Jim?
I think so.
You know, for a lot of this season, he just looked disinterested in defense, but not
really
in this
for his
playoff.
Career. Mostly, actually, on the defensive end for his career.
No, disagree. No, don't do that to him. That's not fair. His rookie year, that was certainly a knock. He buckled down and was acknowledged by virtually everybody in his second season as being, wow, he finally really, you know, figured it out, and he became he wasn't going to be, you know, making all defensive team in the NBA. By any stretch of the imagination, but was an adequate defender. You know, he played both ends of the floor.
Okay.
Then he started to take steps back again, and this year was just, you know, I really wonder how much of it had to do with David Blatt being fired and then Tyronn Lue taking over, and whether or not there was as much demanded of him. I don't know. But he's been up and down in his career, is what I would say, career being down. You know
that's
what I'm saying?
That's fair.
I'm sorry?
That's fair.
Yeah. But to that point, Jim, he played really good defense in the series against the Pistons. And more importantly, he was spectacular on offense, the kind of thing that's going to really put pressure on if they were to make it to the finals against the Warriors again, on Steph Curry. Steph Curry did not have to deal with that last year.
Yeah, no doubt. And the most remarkable thing to me, Bob, about his Kyrie Irving's offense was, and I didn't realize that until obviously Game 4 ended last night, that's only the second time that a LeBron James-led team has not been led by LeBron in points per game in a series. Yeah, I know. I find that fascinating.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that, but yeah, he did, and that happens so rare on LeBron playoff teams. And at the end of the day, now they're going to get their rest because Hawks and Celtics is going minimum six now. That's a 2-2 series.
By the way, are you ready to acknowledge the Celtics as being more of a legitimate threat? I talked to you about this before the playoffs started.
No, I'm not. I'm still not. I'm still a believer that Detroit will be their toughest of their opponents in the first two rounds.
And they
swept them.
I'm
still a believer of that.
And
yes,
they swept
them
because now if it's the Hawks or the Celtics, all they have to do is go to five, and you're wrong on that prediction.
Technically, yes. I would be wrong in that prediction, but I'm standing by it for right now.
All right. For now, you can do that. But I think these Celtics are better than you think, and I also think the Hawks are somewhat of a challenge. And I think I don't think the Cavs will sweep either one of them. All right. That's it. We're out of time. We got to run. Good stuff, Jim Cushlin. As always, thank you, my friend. Thank you to our guests, obviously, Chris Manning and also Jordan Blount, and then also our attorney friend from Dallas talking about Johnny Manziel, Chris Lewis. Thanks so much to everybody for your listening as well. Tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock, we're back with the next extravaganza. Have a great one. Drive Time is next.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.